Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Ms. Ford? Not present as yet. Mr. Helling?
Here.
Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovak? Not present as yet. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum?
Thank you, Jan. Good morning, everybody. We're here for the regular meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board, Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. It's 9:03 a.m. First off, before we get started with the agenda, I just wanted to extend a welcome to our new member, William Christensen. I've heard really good things about you. I'm excited to have you on the team here. If you have any questions going forward, please don't hesitate to reach out to any of us. I'm sure we'd be happy to help, but welcome. Please feel free to add any comments if you want.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Bell. I just want to say that I'm honored to join this board, and I've attended the A&O committee and the investment committee so far, and I must say I've been very impressed with the leadership of Mr. Helling and Mr. Klusman, and with Mr. Allen and his team at ERS. Again, I'm very impressed and very excited to be working with you all, and I've got a little bit of a learning curve, learning the terminology and the concepts, but I think with the support that's been offered, I think we'll be getting there very shortly. So thank you.
Thank you. And sometimes we're a little less formal by first name. Do you go by William or Bill, or what do you prefer?
Yeah, I go by Bill.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. Again, welcome. And we'll jump right into our scheduled meeting. Item number one, approval of minutes. Item A, regular meeting held March 26, 2024. Any comments or questions regarding from board members or staff? All right, not hearing any. I will put forth anyone make a motion to approve the regular minutes held March 26, 2024?
Kovac makes that motion.
Thank you, Nick. Good morning. And do I have a second?
Conrad seconds.
Thank you, sir. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objection. The motion to approve the minutes from March 26, 2024 passes. Moving on to item two, the Chief Investment Officer Report. David, are you going to handle this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sauer has prepared a performance update for the board this morning.
Great. Thank you, David. Good morning, Eric. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. The fund ended the month of March with a value of $5.97 billion. The return of 1.9% for the month, net of fees, underperformed by approximately 79 basis points. The primary driver of relative performance, as we discussed at the investment committee meeting, the private equity, some of the unique situation that we have with the private equity benchmark was the main driver of relative performance. So that detracted 159 basis points this month. Partially offsetting some of that was the fund's real estate allocation, which added 30 basis points. The fund's style bias, which added 19 basis points, and that was primarily from the fund's value bias. And then the fund's overall allocation also added 19 basis points. This was primarily from an overweight to private equity and an underweight to real assets. You can see that the fund has underperformed the benchmark in the year-to-date and one-year time periods, while outperforming the 5, 10, 15, and 20-year periods. Through April 22nd, the fund is down approximately 2.4% month to date, which brings the year-to-date return to up 0.4% and the fund value to $5.83 billion. 9 out of the fund's 15 active mandates are outperforming year-to-date, and the fixed income and absolute return asset classes are outperforming their respective benchmarks year-to-date. Year-to-date, we've also seen an investment change of positive $25.4 million, paid out benefits and expenses of $124.4 million, and received contributions of $216.8 million. Benefits will be paid from the fund's cash balance this month. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Eric. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? All right, not hearing any. Thank you, Eric. We will move on to item 3, investment committee reports.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
Or first?
Yeah, I was just going to add a couple of things if you don't mind it. With the chief investment officer?
No, please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I know we covered a lot of the investment committee last Thursday. We went over preliminary performance through March, as well as a lot of the initiatives. I was just going to add try to find a couple maybe interesting things to say here. One, I just want to thank everybody for the flexibility you gave us for in the guidelines for cash management purposes at the end of last year. I mean, it was really driven by the result of kind of Act 12 and some of the higher contributions we're getting. But this was, I mean, again, the ideal environment is when stocks just go straight up, right? Or markets do well and we could report a 8 or 10% return in a few months. But that doesn't happen most time periods. We have to be prepared for any environments. And this is one of those time periods where, I mean, we estimate that by being able to keep those over $200 million in contributions in cash as opposed to kind of having the guidelines force us to put it into fixed income, for example, which is where it probably would have gone, it's probably saved the fund $5 to $10 million these first few months of the year. So it's just a small example of, you know, that some of these things we talk about and these decisions you make, they don't necessarily, again, sometimes it can work against you or for you, but having that flexibility and that extra tool has certainly helped us this year. In a month like this in April, where rates are up and bonds are losing a little money and stocks are down, we can say, okay, this isn't the best environment to go to stock and bond managers and have them realize some losses to pay benefits. So we have a little extra cash, which, by the way, is making over 5% annualized yield right now. And take from that, when stocks were going up at the beginning of this year, we took about $50 million, trimmed it from some of those stock gains from managers that were off to a good start earlier this year to pay benefits. So again, just wanted to reinforce that. I think we can feel good, and it really has helped us. It's been an extra tool that's helped the investment team. And I know Eric talked about private equity earlier. I just want to reinforce it. Just depending on who's on the line and listening. I mean, if we talk about private equity and you know, how we benchmark it to a U.S. stock market, essentially. Stock market's at a lagged quarterly benchmark. So the benchmark's done really well the last few quarters. It did really well in the Q4. Our private equity statements didn't report anything, so it goes against us in a quarter like this. We're consistent. We've been consistent in how we've measured our private equity program since its inception in 2010. It's added value over 3, 5, 7, 10 years. It just so happens that the way that private equity has performed in the private markets have performed in the last 12, 18 months. It hasn't kept up with a U.S. stock market that's gone straight up. But these fund returns, private equity is really masking a lot of good things that we talked about last Thursday. But I mean, when I run the attribution numbers and exclude how we treat private equity on a quarter-to-quarter basis, our fund would be outperforming even on the quarter, year-to-date basis, as well as as we're already showing you on the all the longer time periods. I just wanted to reinforce that. If there's any questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, thank you for letting me share those thoughts.
Thank you, David. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? All right, thank you, David. And I will go to Tom's way for the report. Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At our April 18th meeting, the Investment Committee unanimously elected Deborah Ford as its vice chair, which is fantastic. Callan then provided the committee with a due diligence report on the fund's investment managers. Callan also gave us a presentation titled Act 12 Framework and Peer Group Comparison. Callan noted that Act 12 significantly changed many of the assumptions that were used in the fund's previous asset liability study, and that that as a result, Callan recommended completing a new asset liability study. Staff and the committee agreed with Callan's recommendation. So Callan expects to start this process later this year and anticipates it being an iterative process that may not be finalized until 2025. Staff then provided an update on the investment team's ongoing initiatives, which included an update on the investment analyst recruitment process, which was all good news. Staff then presented a first quarter performance update, which included preliminary March 31, 2024 data. Finally, staff discussed how the investment team utilizes FactSet and requested approval of the client license agreement as amended. And after some discussion, the committee approved the FactSet agreement. So in summary, the investment committee recommends approval of the following item. One, approval of the FactSet client license agreement as amended. And if we need to approve it again, I think at a full board, then I would make a motion to do that. And that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions or comments from board members or staff? And then we can deal with the approval item. Right, not hearing any. I think Tom put forward the approval of the FactSet client license agreement as amended. Do I have a second regarding?
This is Ms. King, I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. King. Any objections regarding? Not seeing any objection, the approval of FactSet client license agreement as amended passes. Tom and Jerry, I just have a quick question. Not sure if it fits in, but it was discussed with the Act 12. I know we're coming up on the first quarter numbers getting released for the sales tax. Is that something that we can discuss at the next meeting? I know we were thinking the end of April that would get released. Does that formally have to be put on an agenda, or how would that work, Jerry?
We can put it in the executive director's report. I must tell you, though, Matt, that our agency doesn't have much visibility on sales tax receipts, but we can contact the budget office and the treasurer and find out. But I believe you're correct that it was not anticipated we would have any proceeds coming into the city before then. So I'll just put it in my report. There's no action needs to be taken by the Board of Trustees. It's purely a matter between the plan sponsor and the state, revenue people.
Thank you, Jerry.
If I understood your question, but I'm not sure. You're asking about
sales. No.
Okay.
Yeah, I know in the past we just discussed what the first quarter number would be as far as the collection for the sales tax. I just wanted to make sure we addressed it if we had to as a group, because I know it came up in a prior discussion. But that'd be great if you can include it in your report next month.
Yeah, we'll find out about it. And obviously we have the fund has an interest in the city's tax receipts, because much of it is going to be used to fund our fund. Thank you.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. I don't think there's going to be really, I've been telling everybody since before this all started that it won't be for a year from today or you know, a year from now. Next spring of 25 is when we'll probably have useful information because we'll have a full year. There's a lag in when it's due. There's another lag in distribution. So it's not like after the first quarter it's known and then there's some overlap. There's some uncertainty about which money was for which month, and I'm not sure that'll, you know, I don't think we'll have true clarity until we have a full year.
Awesome. Thanks for the input, Nick. Sounds good. We will move on to item four, the Administration and Operations Committee reports. Go ahead, Tim.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Matt. The Administration and Operations Committee met last Wednesday, April 17th. We had two items on the agenda. First one was the approval of the Perigen contract amendment. They do IT application services for the merits program and other stuff behind the scenes. I saw that Patrick on the line that they reviewed and negotiated that Fourth Amendment. Do you have anything to add, Patrick?
It was actually Alex from the city attorney's office.
I'm sorry, Alex. Yep, I'm sorry.
Good morning, members of the board. Yep, this is Assistant City Attorney Alexander Foundas. I did review the initial contract, which was signed in 2016, which is being extended by this amendment. I did not note any issues that would prevent the extension of this contract, and therefore I worked with the ERS administration to draft this amendment, which would extend the contract for a certain period and change the maximum amount under this contract, and one other provision relating to the timeliness with which ERS pays invoices each month.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Jerry. I'd like to make a couple of comments for the benefit of all the trustees who may not be familiar with this firm. The A&O reviewed this. Perigen is it's actually a domestic company, but they have an offshore operation that we use for IT. Coding purposes especially, and this contract is for maintenance of one of the contracts for maintenance of merits. So it's an important part of our IT solution here. And Jeff's online, and if anybody has any questions as well about the details of their operation.
Okay, if there wasn't any other questions, the committee approved for the board to approve that. And then the second item agenda was the approval of the draft ERS 2025 budget. We had a robust discussion on that. Dan, he gave us a big overview of it. And I don't know if anybody has any questions on that. Dan's on the line. Or else the committee also approved that one as well for the board.
Dan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yep. I'll just summarize just the main points of the 2025 budget. Overall, we're requesting a total budget of $24,475,619. That's an increase of just under $1.5 million from the 2024 adopted budget. The main driver of the increase is increased salary and fringe benefit costs, and that's due to some market studies that we had completed from 2023 and in 2024. The other notable item is our investment manager fees. We're projecting them to go down by just under $500,000. The main driver of that is just the change in our asset allocation from public equity to fixed income. So that's the main reason why our investment manager fees are down for 2025. And that's pretty much the major items. If there's any questions, I'm available to answer.
All right, if there's no other questions, that completes my report. And I will motion to approve letter A, approval of the Perrington contract amendment.
Mr. Chair. This is Klusman.
Go ahead, Tom.
Not so much a question as much as a comment that just to, in the open meeting, to bring up that I brought up at the committee meeting, that first line, the salaries budget, you see the increase, that's a greater than 42% increase over last year. And like Chair mentioned, we didn't add any new divisions that I'm aware of to staff over the past year. That's the result of the market studies and the updating, and I'm saying this as a good news type of a thing. The atrophy, the post-10 atrophy of our employees' wages apparently has been corrected through these market studies in a rather large fell swoop. So just wanted to point out that good news for our staff.
Thank you for adding that. Yep. Any other questions? Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, Tim, I know you put forth the approval, motion to approve the Perrington contract amendment. I will second that motion. And any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the approval of the Perrington contract amendment passes. And then we also have item B, put forward a motion to approve the draft ERS 2025 budget. Is there a second?
This is Ms. King. I'd like to second that, but just one thing I wanted to point out. One of the things we did discuss, if you looked at the last page, the non-ERS benefits part of it, we talked about where it states the employer retirement fund contribution. We also see the adopted budget for 2024 has $205 million plus, and then in the drafted 2025 budget does not have anything in the line item. And so we talked about if it's possible, both Ms. Plus and myself, and I believe Ms. Healing agree, that maybe just making an assumption. Again, this is just a request budget, but we assume it's going to be it, and nothing's set in stone. In this way, if someone is ever looking at this document in the future, recognizing that a budget went from $209 million to $4.2 million, they may wonder what's causing this without having context. So just maybe making an assumption there would be good. But beyond that, I think it's a very healthy discussion we had in the A&O committee, and I would recommend approval of the proposed and requested 2025 budget.
Thank you, Molly. Any comments or questions regarding the comments?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman again.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, to that last point, I believe that was part of the motion in committee when we recommended approval of this, that there was going to be a number in there, and maybe it just didn't make it in yet, but the approval was, at least my vote for approval was contingent on plugging in, because every number in this 2025 draft request is an estimate. So we should put one in because that page does read very reader unfriendly to someone that might look at it and wonder why the heck we went from 210 million almost to four. So I'd like to renew that and if possible, if it wasn't part of this motion, to make that a motion that we approve it with the addition of a number in there that would be a reasonable assumption.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Allen. I want to respond to Mr. Klusman. We'd be glad to do that, Mr. Klusman. We have a number from the actuary. It actually was presented to the board last month, so we know what the number is overall for both the entire fund, for all the plan sponsors collectively, and also for the city of Milwaukee. On an estimated basis, and of course the valuation will, for 2025's contribution, will be presented in the month of June, But in the meantime, to honor your request and the adoption of the motion that was done in committee, we will include in the record the amount that the actuary cited at last month's meeting.
That's good. And Jerry, maybe point out for the new people that weren't that committee, the point that when you present this now for the first time in, I believe you said September, that's going to be a real number for
the city. Sure. So as a result of rescheduling the timing of valuations going out of Act 12, we now have the advantage for the plan sponsors of being able to provide a valuation in June of the prior year with a contribution amount for the subsequent year. In the past, the contribution was not definitively known until the middle of the plan year. Now we know it, you know, in the middle of the prior plan year, so that there is some decent lead time for the Common Council and the administration to deliberate on their budget during the normal budget cycle in the fall. So that's, in my opinion, a great improvement, and it's a result of the actuary having, you know, adopted a protocol that's very common in the public plan world to do what's called a one-year contribution lag. It doesn't actually mean our contributions are coming in later than they used to. It just means that the actuary will now have a valuation again in the prior plan year for the subsequent year, you know, about a year earlier. So that's all good news for all the budget planners, I believe.
Thank you, Molly. Tom, Jerry as well, for the comments. Any other comments or questions?
Mr. Chair?
Right. Yes, that...
this is Dan. Back. This is Dan Gopalan.
Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Yep. Our actuary estimated the city's contribution to be just over $175 million for 2025.
Well, Dan, this is Jerry. We have a hard, we have a written amount in the actuary's presentation for the total fund. The city's share is estimated to be $180 million as of the last written communication. His exhibit included, you're right, you know, the 175 for the city, but, you know, subsequently in connection with discussions with the budget office, we asked for a written estimate more than a month ago. And it's $180 million for the city proper, and I don't have the figure in front of me because I don't have the exhibits for the total employers, but it's over $200 million in aggregate for all the employers. And as I mentioned, we'll make sure that there's a updated exhibit here that's included in the minutes, a reference in the minutes, so that we will record and document what Mr. Klusman requested. Thank you, Lodan.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks again, Jerry. Any other comments? And now we put forth the approval of the draft ERS 2025 budget. I made the motion. Molly seconded it. Do we have any objections regarding it? Not hearing any objections, the motion for the approval of draft ERS 2025 budget passes. Moving on to item 5, new business, letter A, retirement, death claims, and refunds for March 2024. Go ahead, Jerry.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your packet, we are asking for you to approve the payroll for this month for the retirements, death claims, and refunds, as the chair mentioned. And so this is a routine housekeeping item. If anybody has any questions or comments, we'll be glad to address them. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Not hearing any.
Mr. Chair, this is Molly. I have a silly question.
Go ahead, Molly.
Mr. Allen, I'm looking at the retiree, and there's two terminologies being used, and I'm curious. One is MAGS. When we look at just an example, and it says the options, so you have retiree type, retiree subtype, last name, first name, retirement date, option, and department. And one part, and the options is some of it, most of it says like mags or percents. What's the difference between mags and 100?
Well, what that refers to is, well, the difference between mags and 100, 100 is, would be a 100% survivor benefit, and the maximum amount is a single life annuity such that there's no survivor benefit, and we refer to that as the max because the member is getting the maximum amount of an unreduced pension benefit based on only a single life annuity. And then when you see the other figures like 75 or 100 or 50, those are the amount of survivor benefits that go to the survivor, and also, you know, it, there's a cost to that because we're covering two lives instead of just a single life. So the benefit's reduced, and the survivor gets, the monthly benefit to the member is reduced during the member's lifetime, and the survivor receives whatever percentage was elected. And, you know, the normal sort of usual routine figures are 175, 50, but they can actually be at any percentage, as I think I explained in one of the earlier meetings about the survivor factor business. So, but that's the difference, Molly. So some of us leave 100% to our spouses, others leave 75 or 50.
No, good to know. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Molly. I'd like to put forth a motion to approve the payroll for March 2024. Do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Molly. Do I have a second?
Conrad seconds.
Thank you. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, motion to approve payroll for March 2024 passes. Moving on to item 5, letter B, conference requests, April 2024 board meeting. We have four to consider. The first one is for Thomas Courtright, 2024 Madison Investment Conference, one-day conference, estimated cost $300. Second is also for Mr. Courtright, BlackRock Institutional Investor Insight Conference. That's a two-day conference in New York for approximately $1,200. Third is for Mr. Sauer, America's Investors Summit. That's in Chicago, two-day conference, estimated cost $800. And the final one is for Mr. Dickerson, 2024 Neuberger Berman Conference in Goldman Sachs, due diligence. That's in New York. That looks like a three-day trip, estimated cost of $1,850. Any comments from board members or staff? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion to approve the conference request for April 2024.
Mr. Allen will make that motion.
Thank you, Tim. Do I have a second?
Mr. Christensen, second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve conference requests as stated for April 2024 passes. Moving on to item 6, medical reports. Item A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for April. Jerry or Gus, are you handling
this? Yeah, Gus is going to talk to the board today. Thank you, Gus.
Morning, this is Gus Petropoulos, and before you are two reports, the medical panel approvals report and the medical council approvals report. The medical panel report is standard, nothing notable there. On the medical council approvals report, there was not one new application for ordinary disability retirement by Stephanie Ramskugler. That's before you, recommended by the medical council for approval. And that completes the reports before you today.
Thank you, Gust. Any comments or questions regarding?
Mr. Klusman, just one.
Go ahead, Tom.
You probably expected it, Gus, but I usually ask about the exempt from re-exams. Is this another one that's passed that window, or is there some story there?
Well, what happens with merits data reporting is that that appears when a person is converting. So going forward, once they've converted from the duty disability retirement and to the other age-related benefit, they are no longer required to have the annual re-exam. So that comes up when that occurs, so that's the explanation for that appearing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Gus. Any other comments or questions? I just have one. I just wanted to mention for one of our members, one of our firefighters was battling a fire last week, and he had a real close call with a terrible situation in a fire where he was trapped, as it's been reported. I just want to mention this, and our thoughts are with him and MFD as well through this tough time. He's in the hospital still recovering. But just like to mention this when any of our members, whether it's DPW or police or fire or any other city employee member of our fund, that this happens, just to remind everyone of the work that we're doing and how it really truly does make a difference. So thanks to everybody.
Thank you, Matt.
Moving on, then we'll have a motion to approve medical reports for March of 2024. Do I have a motion to approve?
The April report, sir.
I'm sorry, did I hear Tim?
This is Gus Petropoulos. Matt, it's the April approvals report.
Oh, sorry, did I say March?
Yeah.
Sorry, motion to approve the medical reports for April.
I'll need to make that motion.
Oh. Thank you, Tim. Have a second.
Ms. King will second.
Thank you, Ms. King. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve medical reports for April 2024 passes. Moving on to the item six, unfinished business. Letter A, pending legal opinions and service request report. Go ahead, Jerry.
We have Patrick here today. There's a legal opinion that I requested, and a copy of the request is in the packet right behind this report. So Patrick, why don't you address, for the benefit of the board, the issues that are at issue here, I guess.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Assistant City Attorney Patrick McLean. As I believe most of the trustees will recall, there was a one of the provisions in Act 12, specifically Section 241, changed the definition of employees contained in Chapter 396 of the laws of 1937, which is the enabling legislation for the employees' retirement system. That language was subsequently codified in various parts of Chapter 36. And what it did essentially was it limited the membership eligibility of employees hired to a city or city agency after December 31st, 2023, which has the effect of limiting who can accrue benefits after that date. As predicted at the time, we are now running into some nuanced questions about this language, particularly what happens when an employee attempts to transfer from an MPS position to the general city service. Some of you might not be aware of this, but it's not as easy as simply transferring. There's actually a change of employers, so there's often a resignation and a rehiring involved. And so the question arose as to whether that change in employment status would trigger this provision and essentially require the employee to be enrolled in the WRS. After the initial request, I'll just add that we did get some initial questions about some general city employees who are looking to return to city service after a separation. So we've expanded our opinion to look at that issue as well. Because these inquiries are pending and are potentially going to affect employment decisions, we're working on this as quickly as possible and hope to have an opinion before the next meeting. If anyone has any questions, I'd certainly be happy to answer them. And if Jerry has any additional comments he'd like to make, I'd welcome those as well.
Well, I'd just like to make one additional comment or disclosure for the benefit of the board. Since the beginning of the year, we've had already a couple of new hires and rehires that we have enrolled in the WRS. And as Patrick mentioned, we've gotten in the last 2 weeks, maybe five or six separate inquiries from, you know, various people who are very interested that they're, you know, weighing an employment offer and they're interested as to what their pension benefits are going to be. And these are from all around the system. You know, this one is from MPS. You've got a one from the Common Council where the alderman is considering hiring a new chief of staff who used to work for the city and is returning. There's an inquiry as of, I guess, yesterday from MMSD, and so we're getting inquiries all around. So the default position we've taken, because we do have to report on a real-time basis or, you know, every payroll basis, any new hires or rehires based on the language of the statute, we are enrolling in the WRS. And of course, the issue is whether there's members have any contractual rights to remain in the ERS. Some of these folks appear to be interested in remaining in the ERS for various reasons. And so in the event that there is an opinion that says that they have the right to remain in the ERS as a contractual and property right that they owned prior to the adoption of Act 12, then we'll have to unwind their enrollment in the WRS. This is not avoidable. I mean, as Patrick mentioned, we had considered some of these issues last fall when the charter amendments were being drafted, but given the, you know, the tight deadlines for getting the charter amended and getting the Act 12 provisions adopted so the city could benefit from the sales tax, there wasn't really enough time to get a city attorney's opinion or take any other action in that regard. So we're just proceeding to follow what appears to be the language of the statute and asking questions about what are the members' rights, do they have other rights that might conflict with the statute, and then, well, I guess we're going to see what Patrick and his colleagues had to say on that subject. So hopefully that's clarified enough, but we'll be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick and Jerry. Any comments or questions regarding?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Conrad.
Hi, Mr. Conrad. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just going to take the opportunity to clarify something for some of the members, and then maybe Patrick hopefully will comment too on it. Chapter 36 uses the term agency, city agency, and that's really in there for maybe historical reasons. You know, an agent is someone who's controlled by a principal, and obviously the city doesn't control the MMSD, doesn't control the school board and so forth, but it's really just a term of art that's been used to identify the other entities that are in the system. But when you work in this, when you read this stuff, you shouldn't be confused by it to think that some of these are legal agents of the city, because they're not. And that's why when people use the term transfer, they're really not transferring, they're resigning from one employer and joining another employer. Patrick, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, Rudy, that's spot on, a very astute observation. And that's precisely why this question arose, is because it's not as simple as Rudy indicated as simply transferring within the same employer, sort of a big umbrella employer with multiple departments underneath it. It's really an employee leaving the employment of one employer, in this instance, MPS, and accepting a position with a new employer, in this instance, the city, or possibly vice versa. And so that's why, you know, if someone was going to transfer within the city, we wouldn't be running into this issue because they wouldn't be quote unquote hired as contemplated by this provision. But because they are being hired when they leave NPS and joining the city, that's why this question arose, and that's what prompted this legal analysis. So I certainly anticipate addressing this issue at length in the legal opinion, but that's an excellent observation, Rudy.
Yeah. Well, this is Jerry. I should have mentioned one thing. I just sort of ambiguously mentioned the potential or the question of whether there are contractual rights, and specifically what I meant by that is the signatories to the global pension settlement, people who hired prior to January 1st, 2000, the settlement provides some rights for them potentially that we need to evaluate. Also, there's a section of Chapter 36, Article 13 of Chapter 36 creates a contractual relationship between the plan sponsors and the members for their rights and benefits under the ordinance, under Chapter 36, and under the Section 396 of the state law. Those are the contractual issues that are involved, both the charter ordinance and actually the state law too, the 37 Act and the 47 Act, and then of course the global pension settlement, all of which is going to pose a fair amount of complexity for Patrick and his colleagues to sort through all of that as to, you know, how to consider, you know, which takes precedence, the provisions of those statutes I mentioned, or Act 12. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick and Jerry, and thank you, Rudy, as well, for those timely comments and bringing those points to light. Any other comments or questions regarding? All right, not hearing any, we will move on to item 7, letter B, pending legislation report.
There's no pending legislation changes to discuss today. Thank you. Or there are none.
Thank you, Jerry. Moving on to item 7 of unfinished business, letter C, executive director's report, inventory of ERS projects. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief on this. On the personnel update, we're still working with the ER to fill positions in the position of the ERS accounting assistant. We did fill the one position in the investment team earlier that David and Eric can address if you'd like more information about that. There's a gentleman from Northwestern Mutual that came over, and there's another hire pending from to fill the second investment analyst position. On member services, we are continuing, of course, to have new retirees on the payroll, and so we've got 24 for the month of March, and 27 we're anticipating for this month. There were some of our employees, retirees, who passed away in February 17, and we don't have any updates since that time, so that's good news. There's a new police recruit class, and 43 attended a session that Mike Juke conducted back in March. And we're having a workshop for the public schools. We did rather have a workshop in March, and we have a good attendance there. 115 employees attended. Moving on to financial services, we have lots of things going on. You approved the budget today. Thank you very much. And we're continuing to work with the actuary and the Legislative Audit Bureau and preparation of the actuarial evaluation and the ACFR for 2023. And then we sent out the second round of outside earnings letters to the members. We're still working on that. That's going to occur before the end of the month. And these are reminder letters to those who didn't respond to the first series of letters. Everything seems to be going well with IT. Jeff filled in the A&O committee on the progress and the status of our various ongoing IT efforts, but there's no delays to report there. And then lastly, I have a note on the administration section that we're going to, I'm going to ask Gus to elaborate, because he's been involved in obtaining a quote to further harden the security in our reception area. So Gus, why don't you explain to the trustees what that's all about?
Well, over the years, there's been increased incidents of disorder that have entered our workspaces from outside the our work environment. It's coming into our, interrupting our course of business. We've taken some measures in the last couple of years of initially locking the front door to access to our work area, at least the front counter, by buzzer. In the last few months, we've, through the landlord, have limited access from the street to the interior of the building by use of the intercom and video system. And then more recently, we've locked the elevator out to the third floor that also requires buzzing in. This is because we've had people camping out in our bathrooms. In particular, a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we had a male person spending a good amount of time in the women's bathroom from someone outside of our agency and outside of our membership. So we've taken those steps. In about 2 months ago, or at the turn of the year, DPW reached out to all city agencies and asked if they wanted the quotes for any capital improvements. At that time, Jerry and I discussed the potential of re-examining hardening of our front counter area. We have people that sit at that front counter essentially alone that are put in a position of somewhat gatekeeper to the rest of our office. And we thought that it would be a good idea to get a quote for some hardening of our infrastructure to go along with, it seems like, the next step potentially from the steps we've already taken. Some of the members of our board that have been on our board for quite some time, Ms. Ford, Mr. Conrad, are familiar with prior incidents of members disrupting our business that were not happy with certain situations that they've requested in the past. And this is meant to inhibit their ability to A, disrupt our business, and B, protect our employees. So this is a quote from the DPW. There's one portion of it that is subcontracted out due to the fact that city agencies don't have the ability to install that particular glass. If you look at the quote, that's in the glazing area. But essentially, it's before you for your consideration and to see if there's any consensus from the board to proceed.
Yep, I should add, there have been a couple of occasions over the years where you've had to call in the City Hall security, the police officer from over at City Hall, to come over here to address potentially violent situation. Also, we have our receptionist who opens the mail. She's now taking the precaution of wearing rubber gloves as she opens the mail, because we did have some concern about substances in an envelope at one point. So that generally, I think it's fair to say that the security, or the threat profile, seems to be continuing to increase, not only for IT hacking, but also physically, in our offices here. So we had obtained some quotes in prior years, and we thought this would be a good time to refresh them, and we got one from the DPW folks. So what we're looking for today is some consideration as to whether or not we should proceed with this. If there's a consensus on the board, then we'll bring back a contract, the work order, for the work. Thank you, Gus.
Thank you, Gus, for the info. And Jerry, open it up to board members and staff to discuss.
Mr. Chair, this is Molly.
Yes, Molly.
Go ahead, Mom.
Just a quick thing. I think, employee safety is absolutely number one priority for, I think, I was like speaking on behalf of the entire board, that is the utmost importance. But just curious, as it relates to 789 Norton Water, the Suite 300, is it a responsibility? Because we spent almost $500,000 just pure rent for that space. Is it a responsibility of the the building to ensure the security and safety of their tenant, or, and I'm just curious, is there some cost sharing? And that's one part of the question. And second part of the question is, I'm not sure how long our lease is for, making an investment close to $100,000, and, you know, how long have we been planning on staying there? Is there a kind of space study has been done? And I'm just curious. I think it's a good investment to make sure that the safety of our employees is utmost priority, but just curious optics-wise.
Well, those are really good questions, Molly. Our lease renewal was for 7 years, and I can't exactly remember when we renewed that, but it was in the last couple of years, 21 maybe?
Yeah, I think we're going to have another 5 left.
We have another 5 left to go, okay? So number one, number two, but beyond that, you know, the reason we're over here to begin with is because there was really no space for us at City Hall, and that was reviewed you know, before I came on board 16 years ago, and I believe we've been in this building since when, Terry, you were here?
2007.
So there was no space, and the, you know, the last I heard, in connection with some discussions about deferred comp occupying space on City Hall, that the 8th floor continues to be uninhabitable for, you know, office personnel because of various you know, problems with asbestos and things like that, paint. So I'm not sure there's much of a prospect to move us back to City Hall, and we've had conversations over the years with DPW about using other buildings, you know, other space on the City Hall campus, but none of them really panned out. So we're here for another 5 years, and I'm not sure what's going to happen after 5 years, but it's an open question, I guess. Number one. Number two, as far as responsibility, the building has certain responsibilities for the structure here. I mean, they shovel the sidewalks, they put salt out, things like that. They asbestos noted hardened the entranceway. To get in from the street, you have to buzz in, and there's a video camera. We feel some responsibility for the safety of our employees here. We're not like every tenant in the building. We do have, as you know, thousands of members, and not all of them are always happy. There are times when there are benefit denials, and we've had threats here. The landlord is not really responsible in the event that someone, if we had an active shooter here, for example, maybe Patrick has some comment on this from a legal perspective, but I don't see that the landlord would have any responsibility for that. In, you know, in terms of liability, that's really almost secondary concern to me. I'm mostly concerned about the health and safety of our employees here. And we don't have in-person trustee meetings, but also for our members and any of our trustees if they should happen to be on the premises. And as I mentioned before, we seem to be living in a world where there's an increasing threat environment. I think we all see it. There's, you know, potential violence everywhere. No place is safe. And so that's why we're, you know, considering providing some extra measure of safety for our employees.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. I think that's really thorough. And comment, and I appreciate the response. Yeah, I agree, it's getting more crazy out there. I know most, a lot of different floors in City Hall are already putting up similar safety measures, whether it's the election office, even DOA recently has put up like these mechanisms to ensure that people aren't able to access their office space. So I totally get that. So I appreciate your response to my question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Molly Chair. And Jerry.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, Jerry, what is the staff feelings on this? Like the people that actually have to work at the counter, are they asking for this, or are they thinking that they don't want to work behind a firewall? Are they supportive?
Nobody's objecting to the idea of working behind the firewall. Over, you know, our staff is, you know, they understand that there's some, I'll call it occupational hazard, for like a better term, of, you know, coming to work every day, you know, traveling on public streets and in public conveyances and private autos. They have told us in the past that they're concerned about their safety. On occasion, when we've had some problems at the front desk, where we have some irate people, no one's made any statements recently that I know of, Gus, but I think there, there was an event here about 2 weeks ago where, as Gus mentioned, somebody camped out in the ladies' room, a male camped out in the ladies' room, and we weren't sure if it was, there were some workers that came into work on the fifth floor, and that were, you know, we saw an image on a video camera, but the security at the front of the building is not 100% foolproof. We have people that tailgate, that come in behind others that are admitted to the building, and I, and for those that haven't been here for a while, there's a new tenant on the fourth floor that has a mass marketing operation where they have people marketing cell phones in the retail store environment, and these folks come for meetings and for check-in purposes or something, but there, it's not uncommon to have 10 or a dozen of these folks at the beginning, at the downstairs trying to, you know, come in. And they're all fine people. We haven't had any problem with any of them. But strangers can, you know, tailgate in behind them. So it's a, we do have, you know, access control to some extent, but it's, again, not perfect. There are some, you know, street people that find their way in here from time to time. We've had a number of incidents over the years.
And Tom, this is Petropoulos. I would address that, you know, one of the responsibilities I've taken on at the office here is to assess the physical security of the property. And I've interfaced with the employees, especially the front counter employees, and was receptive to whatever recommendations they'd have to improve the security here. And this is one of the things that they've frankly requested. So, to answer your question, are they, do they have objections to it? No, in fact, they'd like to see it.
Good, yeah, that was my question. And then my last remaining is to just the due diligence piece on the expense, and it, Molly touched on it a bit. I guess one, I would just ask, why DPW are we required to? I preface that with, I'm kind of impressed by only $72,000 for that much work, so I'm not saying I'm unhappy with their estimate, but do we have to go with them, or should we just to check, make sure, get another estimate to make sure we're doing the right thing? And then that piece, and lastly, is there something in our lease to deconstruct what we're putting in so when we move out, just so we know going in what we're signing up for? Because it's, I mean, if I was a renter, I'd allow certain, my tenant to do certain things, but then when they leave, I'm going to want them to return the unit back to the condition it was. So are we going to have to take this all down at some point?
Well, this is Petropoulos again. I can address the first issue. We got quotes regarding this front entrance twice in the past. Once after an office reconstruct we did in 2019, we got quotes from those contractors, and then when the lease was signed in 2022, we got quotes from the building management to do similar work. They're in line, these numbers are frankly in line with those prior quotes, and if I were to revisit those other quotes and put in the inflation over the last few years, I would imagine that they would be actually in excess of the quote that we got from DPW. That would be my guess. So I think the number is in line with the market. I think it's
fairly
favorable.
One was 82,000, the other was 78, I believe.
Yeah, they were, and these were older. The older quotes are in line with this one, and if we were to revisit those same quotes, I would suggest that they'd be more than the one we got from DPW. As far as the contract with the landlord to return the property to its original footprint, I don't know what the, we'd have to do some research on that. I don't know that answer to that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, I think I support that, because I've been down there to see the new system where you have to buzz in, and it's nice because it'll filter out some stuff, but it's, to me, it's really no different than an apartment building with a locked lobby. Any tenant can buzz people in, and you don't know what the other folks in the building, their threshold is. A lot of times people just hear a doorbell and push the unlock button. So I see why you're saying we may need a secondary.
I would note that no infrastructure we put in is foolproof. Everybody in the office has to get in and out of the office in some fashion. So if there is someone of a mind to get into the office and do harm, they'll find a way. But I think this would go a long way towards mitigating that risk and also putting the message out that it's not going to be as easy as you think to do something. It'll be some sort of a message that to rethink any thoughts that they were considered doing harm to anybody here. So.
Yeah, good. And if we get some oddball that starts getting in the building and we have a secondary security, just like we advise people to do on in the city, you know, you case harden your location and they're going to move on to somewhere else. So maybe they'll go up to this other tenant, what Jerry was talking about, that's letting them in. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, and Gust and Jerry again. Any other comments or questions regarding?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, whenever something happens, you read in the paper, they trot out their spokesman to say that the safety of our employees is our primary concern. Well, you know, if that's always true, maybe some of those incidents you read about wouldn't have happened. So I certainly support the proposal. Since I don't want something to happen and then have Jerry go out and say the safety of our employees is our primary concern when we are given this proposal and fail to adopt it.
Thank you, Rudy. And I have to set it any better. I wholeheartedly agree with you. And sounds like any other comments? From any of the members?
Yeah, this is Ms. King, Ms. Sabella.
Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah, I concur completely with you and Mr. Conrad on this. Just one cure, and this is just housekeeping, just to navigate what we discuss here at full board versus what we discuss in the committee. Would this have been an appropriate item to be referred to the annual committee for review and vetting or to come into the full board? Just curious, Jerry and Patrick and his own minds.
Since security affects everybody, I thought we would, you know, broach the subject with the full board and then bring the contract back to the A&O to vet the contract. Where the committee's a little more nimble, so that was the plan.
Okay, got you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. Any other comments or questions? All right, hearing any, we can move on to item 8, informational. We have items A through I. Is there any comments or questions from board members or staff on those? Not hearing any, those can be placed on file. And if there's no other comments or questions, take a motion to adjourn the meeting. I will make the.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, who is that?
Ms. Kim Walter.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you, Chip, for the motion. And with that, Tom, for the second?
Yes, please.
Thank you. And not hearing any objections, the motion to adjourn passes, and it's 10:11 a.m. Everyone have a good day.